Welcome to the Experience Lab, the official podcast of Digital Scientists. Digital Scientists is an experience lab located in Atlanta, Georgia. We build digital products for companies that need a fast-paced and disciplined product team. My name's Rob Hall, and I'm the product director at DS. I want to welcome you all to our first episode. The Experience Lab podcast is our chance to share our team's insights and wisdom about building software products. With me in the studio today is our senior product manager, Jay Cosgrove. Say hi, Jay.
Hello, interwebs.
On our inaugural episode, we're going to talk about a topic that we feel might resonate loudly with many of you who design and build software. We're going to talk about tools, more specifically tool churn. We're also going to talk a little about current events and how we're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic here at DS. So, Jay, what's tool churn?
Tool churn. I don't know if it's an actual coined term, but we've coined it.
Industry term.
Yeah, I don't know if you could find it on Google, maybe. But for us, it is the desire to stop using one tool and start using another tool.
Right.
When it all comes down to it.
Yeah.
We just want new
so
things.
So like, I'm tired of this thing and I want to move on to something else.
Yep. The grass is always greener.
Is it?
Nope. Not.
Well... I mean, how many tools do we currently use? Like a million?
Well, it depends if we're going to hone that question down just to the PM team. Is that what we're going to do?
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
We're product managers. What do we know about design or development?
Not much.
No.
We forward emails.
That's pretty much it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's add them up, I would say. So we've got on the first one that comes to mind, I would say, is our actual project management tool, which is Jira.
Jira.
Everyone's favorite. Mm. It's the necessary evil of our industry.
Yeah.
All right. What else? What's the next most used tool, would you say, after that?
Slack.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I mean, Slack's just everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's one of the better ones. I never mind. Mind it, really.
Yeah.
Like, have we ever been limited by it? I don't feel like it.
I think we can be distracted by Slack.
Distracted. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Does it get in the way of productivity? Possibly.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I mainly use it for sending really smart and funny GIFs, so.
Well, you're a smart man.
Is it GIF or is it JIF?
Jake, it depends who you ask. I think we have some team members that would side with you.
Either way you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Depends who's in the room.
All right. Well, so
Slack is next. What else we got?
That's Slack. Two. Gosh, there's email. So we use Gmail. There's Google Drive. You know, all the stuff that goes with the Google Suite, Docs and Sheets and Slides and all that.
I feel like general communication goes in a different bucket a little bit. Like for PMs, I think of very distinct PM tools. So we have project management and then we have like resourcing.
Right.
Budgeting.
So we use a product called Harvest and Forecast for both resourcing and kind of tracking our time.
Yep.
What about like project planning per se? Like, yeah, we track the work in Jira. We define the work in Jira, but
I think that's where most of our churn has been, if we're honest.
Around Jira?
Well, around project planning.
Oh, yeah. You say? Well, yeah, right. So we're like stuck between several different tools right now. Like
yeah.
We have Team Gantt, which,
yeah,
you know,
that's probably the forefront one.
Gantt charts. On
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. And then Forecast like gives us this whole team view into, you know, what everyone is assigned to at a given point. I mean, from your experience, what seem to be the challenges of bouncing between all these different products?
Well, I think when we get down to it, the problem is consistency, really, because you're just going to be faster as a PM over time to run your reports if you know what you're doing with the tool. And so I think every once in a while we come up with new edge cases or like use cases, probably a better word for it. You know, and then we adapt it if we like it and can convince people to do it.
Yeah.
And if we do, then the whole team has to learn something new and it might not be quite as nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important that each team is conscious of just the amount of time that is going to be put into switching tools. And I don't know that. I think we do a pretty good job. We're right in the middle because I've worked for small agencies where literally I was the guy that found the tool and 5 minutes later we're all using it. I've also been on the other side where it's a much bigger org and it takes like months to actually get anything pushed.
That's right.
And with DS being kind of in a pocket of like that 20 to 50 employee range.
Mm-hmm.
We have enough process in place to prevent us from doing crazy things.
Do we?
That's a good question. It depends if how cranky management is about it, because something might change drastically.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm part of it. I know. I guess the thing for me, when I as a product director, I'm looking for tools to help me get an overall grasp on what the whole team is doing at any given time. So what's the design team on a given project doing? What are the developers doing? What's the health of the team? What's the health of the account? What's the status of a portfolio of projects?
Yeah.
Because part of my responsibility is the health and the efficiency of the team, but also being able to take that information back to an executive at one of our clients and say, well, here's where your investment is going. And so that seems to be very hard, because it's easy to get all the way down in the weeds and have tactical information. So, oh, great, I can see how many story points we've planned for the next sprint. But the CFO at our biggest client doesn't really care about that information.
That's right. Yeah.
They want to know, like, what value have they earned? What kind of return have they gotten on their investment with us?
In a high-level picture of the project.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What is it that we're doing for, you know, however many dollars they're spending for this on something?
So what are you, tell our listeners, what are you using to do that currently?
Well, it's kind of tricky, because I don't have a tool that does that. Not effectively, right?
Maybe we need people to write in and make suggestions, because I think this has been a subject of conversation for a very long time here.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're out there and you're hearing this and you've built a magic tool that does all these things in a way that's really good. So on that point, I think we should talk for a second about just what are the issues that we run into with some of these tools, because it seems to me there's this interesting paradigm where you have a tool that might be at a certain level of cost and at a certain level of functionality. They may focus on a narrow set of use cases and do that one or two things very well. I look at harvest
point
and forecast
solutions.
For example. Point solutions, yes.
Yep.
So I look at harvest and forecast, for example. Harvest does a fine job tracking time.
Yep.
I hear it sends out invoices, but we don't use it for that. We only really use it.
Does expensing well too, but we don't use that either.
That's a separate issue. But... So it tracks time fine. Forecast, its companion product, does a fine job illustrating who is assigned to a project or an account.
Right.
And that's about it.
And I think their sweet spot is their integration. And I think that's the reason we've held on to them for so long and resisted the churn on that front. Because when you're trying to estimate a project, then it's really handy, because you can actually over time drag that resource for a certain amount of allocation, percentage of use. And then that's going to track back in Harvest. So when you refresh that same project in Harvest, if they're paired at least, you're going to be able to see, okay, at what point under this allocation am I going to hit the max budget of the project or not?
Mm-hmm.
In former lives of DS, where we did a lot more T&M, that was
right.
Really, we couldn't do away with it. I mean, we had to have that.
We started getting into the issue of just point solutions. And Jay, I want to talk about point solutions in general. What are they, and what's wrong with a point solution?
I don't know if there's something wrong with it. I would define it as
such a corporate-y thing to say, right?
Yeah, it is very corporate.
What is it?
It's a solution, like probably specifically a SaaS product that you use for one specific use case, you know, or it does one single thing pretty well.
Right. So like earlier we mentioned Harvest that we use for time tracking. It does more than one thing, to be fair.
Right.
But
it's not an all-in-one. And so on the other side, you probably have these all-in-one tools like Mavenlink or some other big ones that do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think a lot of the point solutions are trending in that direction of gobbling up other other products, other point solutions, so they can be more of an all-in-one. But that seems to be the trend, is someone did something really well as a point solution, and let me just go and add some more point solutions so I'm an all-in-one, call myself an all-in-one, and then more people will use me.
So like we were talking about Jira earlier, I don't think Jira necessarily is considered a point solution because it has such a broad reach in the development and software development community. But one of its competitors, Pivotal Tracker, some people might argue
is it a competitor?
Yeah,
funny. Of anyone?
Yeah, shh, be quiet. I would argue that it is more of a point solution because to me it does a great job doing what it does, but its scope is fairly narrow.
Yeah, it probably depends on the ecosystem and really would probably come down to the payment structure too. Mm-hmm. So with Jira, I think a lot of people use it as a point solution. So they're just using it for task management. That's what we do.
Right.
You know, we don't really use it for much more, though we have in the past. And I think the problem ends up being, to answer your second question, is that you collect a whole tool belt of these point solutions, and depending on how you select them, they may not all talk together.
Mm.
And you hit on this point a little bit earlier, but just as a director, someone that's going to interface a lot more with clients and deal with contracts a lot more, you need kind of this consolidated view, which right now you're pulling from a bunch of different sources.
Yeah. And to me, that's the big difficulty with all these point solutions. So if I've got communications, let's just talk about project communication alone,
okay,
right? So we were talking about Slack earlier and all of the documents and deliverables that we create using Google Drive. And there's Miro that we didn't even mention. So yep. Miro is the new name of real-time board. And so a lot of collaboration and design work kind of culminates inside Miro. And then there's draw.io, which is kind of integrated with Google Apps. So I've got all this communication over there, and then there's additional project communication that takes place in Slack. Maybe the client's in there, maybe they're not, but then I've got all these other tools over here that I'm trying to manage more at a higher level. So Team Gantt and Forecast and Airtable and Jira. And if I'm trying to like roll all this information up and get some insight out of it, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I've got 12 different things that need to be integrated.
Right.
Now, yeah, you could argue they all have an API. Most of them do anyway.
Right.
Why don't you just build your own thing? Well, no.
Which
we have. So, well, let's talk about that. Project Delta was this internal thing that we built that tried to accomplish that.
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier that in a past life of DS, we did a lot more TNM work. And so how we would structure engagements.
TNM meaning time and material.
Time and materials, if you're just joining us. And pretty much how we would do it is we would, what do they call it? Scrum fall or something? Water agile? I don't know. We would scrum fall into development. And so for the most part,
it was kind of a stumble over a waterfall.
Stumble over, down a waterfall, yes. Try to live.
Yes.
Yeah. And see where you land.
Right.
So contractually, it followed that way. Pretty much we would do a contract for research, a contract for design, and a contract for development. And if we're honest, probably the only one that truly used consistently sprints or the concept of sprints was development. And so, which is the most agile-y kind of form. So I said all that to say that our contracts were quoted at the end of each contract. One of the deliverables was the quote for the next contract, which were all hour-based. And to do that, we would literally build out a task list for the entire next phase of the project. It was a ton of work. I mean, as a PM, as you were rolling into design, like
out of wireframes,
into visual design, you were writing user stories like a madman.
And honestly, that was one of the points where we used to go over budget.
Yeah.
A lot was just trying to estimate.
Just estimating. One of our big projects, just to tip our hand a little bit, we spent 4 full days of an entire dev team and 2 PMs and a director estimating the next phase of the project.
Mm.
So let's add that up. That's like easily, a couple hundred hours?
It's a lot.
A lot of hours.
Hundreds of, yeah.
Yeah. Just to assign story points. And that's not even the time that the PM spent beforehand writing the stories.
And keep in mind, we weren't assigning story points. We were trying to estimate hours.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We had done it in hours. Right. We weren't even doing story points.
That's right. Because we would take the hours and then directly convert it. Yeah. We had this weird multiplier that we would use to add some margin.
And don't do that.
A little buffer.
If you're listening, this is all a bad idea.
Yeah. Don't do this, please.
So getting back on task here is we built this platform that allowed our estimates to be shown at a high level. Actually, it did go down to the story level. You could drill down to it. And so we would track time also through Harvest, but it was integrated with Jira using like a plugin.
Yep.
And the team would track time on a story so we can compare actuals versus estimates. And then we could see as the project was going in real time, pretty much where we were going over budget from what we had originally estimated.
Yeah, and we tried to visually kind of predict where we were trending.
Yep.
Which was helpful.
Yep.
But it was kind of like too little too late sometimes.
Too little too late. And also because it didn't fully integrate with Harvest, which had the forecasted numbers in there, you still did a lot of back of the napkin math to get there as a PM. But you had a couple more tools and a really nice visual clarity of what specific task is going over. And because it was real time and it was a client interface, the client had no excuse on not knowing when things were going over, because they could log in and refresh the page every, you know, few seconds if they wanted to. And as PMs, we would actually use that to show our project updates, which we did once a week.
You talked about the client logging in, mm-hmm. right? So many of these tools, which we can label point solutions,
right.
rightly, it often offer a client view. So right. assign a username and password to a client, give them some sort of a view-only ability. How many of our clients really take advantage of that?
Well, now none.
None.
We've also kind of discontinued Delta, so that's not really a thing anymore. But Jira is something that we still give access to if they request it.
Sure.
And I think the most people that clients that are going to log in are going to be our counterparts. So for the actual functional team.
Right.
So we have a couple of clients where we work hand in hand with maybe a designer or developer on a product that we're supporting through our product, if that makes sense, like a companion product. Sure. And so they might be tracking stories, like if they had a specific request for us.
So where we have essentially parallel roles.
Right.
Another product manager, another designer, developer on the client side as well as our side.
Yeah, though I think in my experience, I haven't had a lot of product managers on my level that, you know, that actually used it. It was mostly designers and developers. So getting back to kind of the point solution thing here, one point I wanted to make is just there's a plus to them, because usually these point solutions do a better job at their individual thing that you're using them for than the big all-in-one.
That seems to be the thing that we've experienced, because we recently went through this whole process here at DS trying to find an integrated solution that could eliminate three or four of these point solution tools. And we realized that, you know, by these tools essentially trying to be all things to all people,
right.
They really like kind of half-assed everything.
Yep.
And I mean, you didn't find a tool that did time tracking as well as Harvest. You couldn't find a tool that handled dev tasking as well
right.
as Jira. You couldn't find another tool that could handle communication as well as what we already have.
It wasn't even necessarily cost efficient either.
No. They're expensive.
A lot of these all-in-ones, they're going to charge a big ticket.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why do you think that is? Why do you think they struggle to do things in an integrated fashion well?
Well, because of the nature of being an all-in-one, they're relying on you using it as an all-in-one, I think. Depends on the platform. But that's like the value when we considered Mavenlink, for example. That was the value. Like if you use their PM, everything from soup to nuts on it, if you use their project management tool, if you use their time tracking and their estimation, you started your estimates in the platform, it worked cohesively. But the minute you started saying like, hey, I've got a Jira integration, we explored it, the integration didn't talk that well to it. And it's a different data structure underneath. And that's ultimately where you get in trouble is the sync and the data structure and how you're using those separate things you're trying to integrate. And, you know, for the few companies that I've worked for that used Jira, they've all used them differently. And that's one single tool that's being used differently. Think about the four others that you're trying to integrate to.
Yeah.
So I think that's the problem, and we would have to be okay with it sucking at something.
Yeah,
if we're honest.
But that was I think the hard part is it wasn't just sucking at something, it was usually sucking at the thing we needed it to do most.
Yeah.
So like honestly, project planning and reporting, that one huge use case that we have from a management perspective,
right,
that we were looking for these tools to help us provide, they just all fell short.
Yep. Which leads nicely to the next thing that I wanted to call out, which is what do you think as a PM needs to be in your PM tool belt as far as tools go?
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, you want to take a swing at it?
Sure.
I know it's been a while since you've been behind the PM.
I know, but the actual PM keyboard. Operate at a higher level these days. Yes, yes.
Oh,
yeah, I know. For me, a really, really good solid issue tracker.
Okay.
So if that's Jira for you and you like Jira and you can and it doesn't nauseate you in the morning, then more power to you. If it's Pivotal Tracker, if it's Clubhouse, if it's whatever, great. But to me, just knowing the intricacies of that tool.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way down to keyboard shortcuts.
Yeah.
Being able to make very quick, efficient use of that when you're writing stories, the most you can avoid using your mouse.
Right.
To get through just authoring a story and saving it and moving on to the next one. To me, that just is such an efficiency gain.
Yep.
In the life of a product manager.
I think that is the most important. I would 100% agree with you. It's like everything stems from that because that's where all your work really is going to be saved and stored. And it's going to be the source of truth.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. To me, and this is less of an issue, I think, for day-to-day product managers. It's very much a project management issue. And we're not going to get into the differences between product and project right now. But for me, just having a very clear customer agreement, whether that is and this is not really necessarily a tool, but having both the documentation and a system to help manage that budget and the resourcing.
So the budget side would be a tool though.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. So for us, that's Harvest, right? If you are tracking, if your business model is oriented around tracking progress towards a given budget, having the tool for you to be able to see at a glance at any point where you are against that budget, that's just critical. To me, that's like table stakes. You have to have it.
And potentially contractually obligated
for
a lot of our contracts.
Right.
We could be audited. And if we are, we have to be able to respond with some sort of level of granularity.
That's right. And it's not even so much an issue of, well, we're not time and material, so why do we care about tracking hours? It's more about just transparency and accountability for us to be able to say we're paying attention and we're trying to be good stewards of your investment. So here's the paper trail.
Yeah. And if we're honest, there's a level of team accountability that comes with it too.
Yeah.
Even if it's not said, you know,
right.
When you're entering your hours each week, you got that thing in the back of your mind, like, did I actually work 8 hours this day?
Did I really work 8 hours yesterday?
I'm not sure.
And then lastly, I would just say for me, Google Drive has been huge. There's part of me that does have that grass is greener attitude because there are so many things about Google apps that can be very clunky at times.
Yeah.
And so like we've investigated alternatives like Quip and Coda and some of those tools are really pretty cool.
They're awesome.
And they do some really, really nice things very well. The problem is like the lack of ubiquity.
Yeah.
Everybody these days seems to have a Gmail account.
Right.
So even if my client at an enterprise level is not in, you know, they're not embedded in Google services, I'm still able to share documents to them.
Yeah.
Where if we were to move away from Google Apps towards, you know, some other third-party service, it would create a barrier.
And I think you mentioned Coda and Quip. I think the decision point where we moved away from them, we can dive in more in a later one, but was just what we were talking about. Could we justify another point solution? And I think the decision we came to with those was, we couldn't. They're really cool, and we could use them for specific things that would be powerful.
Right.
But at the same time, it was like, can we get away with Google Docs? Yes. Okay. Let's just stick with it.
Well, and more of our clients at an enterprise level are using Google Drive.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's like the old days of, well, everybody's on Microsoft Word, so it's the W now.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we're not, you know, entirely stuck in that world anymore.
Yeah. So I think the only thing I would add to your list, I was going to say, if you're an agency, and this probably applies more to agencies than internal product companies, is having a good resourcing tool.
Yeah.
And also going to apply if you have a bigger team. So if you've got five guys, you're not too worried about this probably.
Nope.
If you've got 10 projects and 20 guys, you're worried about it.
It's a big difference. Yeah. Well, and I'll just shamelessly say this. If you're out there and you have $1 million and you'd like to pay us to build a really great resourcing tool, please give us a call because we'd love to do it.
And we'll use it ourselves.
And we would use it ourselves. Yes. Take a moment and wrap up our conversation about tool churn and a couple of lessons that we've learned as an organization, having gone through the process multiple times of evaluating the tool set that we have and looking out in the marketplace to see if are there new tools out there that might do the job that we need a tool to do better than what we already have? Are there tools that can help us consolidate some of the point solutions that we're paying for, et cetera? So a couple of things that we feel are valuable when you're evaluating a new tool for your organization, consider the switching cost. So it's not a trivial exercise to jettison Jira and transition your entire product team to Pivotal Tracker, or to go from Pivotal Tracker to Quip, or to go from Quip back to Jira. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of energy and effort. And that's above and beyond the work that you're already doing trying to run and manage a living product.
Yeah. We can speak from experience here. We have switched PM tools in 2 years, 3 times. And each time the PM team has regretted it a little bit.
Yeah. But the good news is we love Jira, most of us.
As much as you can love Jira.
That's right. But yes. It works, and we're there, and we've made a commitment. Another consideration, do you have an obligation to your client that you need to consider while you're evaluating a tool? So is there a type of reporting or tracking or cost measurement obligation that might be built into your contract with a given client that you need to make sure that a given tool can accommodate? I would say on top of that too, data protection.
Yep.
So especially with GDPR concerns and other things like that, is the tool that you're investigating, do they have a good security policy? Do they handle client data with a high degree of safety? And then further, can the tool be integrated? If you're looking at a point solution, a new point solution to replace something else, can it be integrated with other tools that you already have in a meaningful way?
And vice versa, if you are considering an all-in-one tool, can it really do all the things that you need your point solutions to do well? You don't want to shortchange yourself if there's something that you really actually have to get done just for the sake of saying, I have one tool that does everything.
Yeah, and that said, if it ain't broke, please don't fix it.
Don't fix it, for the love of God.
So on that note, let's take a moment and talk about the coronavirus. So unless you've been hiding under a rock for the last couple of months, and increasingly so in the United States over the last few weeks, it's kind of been a game changer for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot more companies embrace remote work, rightfully so. Though you and I have started off this coronavirus series by locking ourselves in a very tight booth together to record this.
That's a good point. I did wash my hands before we began this process, sir.
I did too, I think.
I hope. Okay. Well, we may be stuck in here together, Jay.
At least we're quarantined.
That's true.
Yep, self-quarantined.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, I think in general, we have kind of like a work from home as necessary type view on it, just because we find a lot of value in people being at work. So together, collaborating.
It's kind of forced us to embrace it more. I think over the years, we've kind of had this natural built-in tension against remote working.
Right.
And we've always made do. We have the tools, the processes, and the people that we need to manage our team in a distributed way. There's lots of other organizations out there that are already doing it and doing it quite well. For us, we value collaboration so much. And there's there's power in just being able to sit next to somebody and, yep. and see the expressions written on their face and their reactions to things. And it's really, it's affected our ability to work closely with our clients as well.
Yep, that's true.
I mean, we got an email just the other day from our main client saying that they're effectively canceling all meetings without outside third parties. And as of Monday, they're going to be working fully remote as well.
Yep. Canceling in-person meetings.
All right? In-person meetings yep. are canceled. Yep, that's yep. right. So how Jay, does this affect your ability to manage a product, to manage your team?
So if I'm honest, the few products that I manage currently, my team is already kind of remote. For those that don't know, DS has a few offices across the U.S. We've got some employees out in Denver, Greenville. I'm here in Alpharetta. We have a Midtown office as well. So I'm pretty used to the remote work. I think where it creeps up and becomes the hardest is when you're interacting with UX and research. So as a PM, you really like to be with them, see the expressions, and whiteboard a lot more than you would probably with a developer. And so as you're considering remote work, I think that's the sticking point for me, is how much communication am I going to have and ultimately collaboration with my design team?
Yeah. Well, there's a relational aspect to it, right?
Yep.
So how well have you been able to overcome kind of that relational barrier with the folks who are in Denver, the folks who are in Greenville, and trying to continue building those relationships and have a high functioning team?
Yeah. So one thing that I haven't done super well, but am doing more of in 2020 is retrospectives. So me as a PM, and we can go into this more later, I'm pretty lax on process. I started off very process heavy. I'm a big fan of Scrum. And since then, I've just realized that each project is very unique and has unique, and each team is very unique that you have on that. So you could have a project that works super well, and if your resources switch, then process might need to change on that project just because of the people that you're working with. And so in this case, my current teams, I've actually been pretty lax in process, and therefore my retrospectives have been pretty casual. Maybe once a quarter, we'll reevaluate, see where things are, because the team is really good at just about being vocal in stand-ups. And I'm pretty good about being attentive to that and responding the next day or that day with changes that need to be made to the process. So since we've kind of gone full on, I've full on remote more so in the last week or so, I've stepped up my retros and they're becoming a little bit more mandatory and a little bit more, we're going to try it out at a once a month case. Our sprints are every other week, so 2 week sprints. So I think that should be fine without killing us with too much process. But that's one big piece for my developers. The design team, I'm not interacting with as much currently, but I think Miro has been our savior all the way around on the design team as far as collaboration goes.
Yeah. So how has Miro helped enable collaboration with the design team?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's just when they present.
Oh, work, but I think you do.
Yeah, maybe. So I think when they're presenting work, it's just much more interactive, and them being able to sync their sketch files directly to the Miro board and us look at it the way they are and comment on it, leave feedback, draw pictures on things if we need to.
Without being destructive.
Destructive to their sketch file.
Yeah. Right.
That's become helpful. And it's just a source online, even for our clients to collaborate on. Again, I don't know if we have a project where a client's super in Miro right now, but we have in the past, and it's been very helpful.
But we actually, we just finished up a big research project.
It's true.
And all the final deliverables are being stuck in the Miro, and the client like specifically requested that they be able to ingest them using Miro. So that's pretty cool.
It's a good example of a one-point solution that was 100% worth it.
Absolutely.
Does something that no one else does. Of course, Envision, a few others are trying to reproduce it, but just hasn't not been that good. Mm-hmm. And our actual research deliverables are being handed over in a Miro board based on requests from our biggest client.
Yep. You know, just thinking about the spread of the coronavirus generally, for us at Digital Scientists, we've imposed a non-obligatory work from home policy. So basically what that means is if you want to work from home as a precaution, particularly if you if your commute to the office is substantial or whatever, or if you just want to play it safe, you're more than welcome to do so. Our office spaces are not generally very dense.
Right.
Whereas I know with some of our clients, they have 1,000 people jammed into a relatively small space where that the proximity of people is a huge concern. So there's a couple of us that are still coming into the office. I suspect we may not be doing that very soon, but
yes.
But for now, we're really just trying to emphasize good sanitation practices in the office. I mean, generally our offices, we keep them pretty clean as it is, but I think we're our CEO was running around with Lysol wipes earlier this morning, wiping off desks and doorknobs and things of that nature, which is just right now is a responsible thing to do. And of course, encouraging everybody to not put their hands on each other and wash your hands and just use common sense as it pertains to stopping the spread of the virus. I would also say that another important thing that we're trying to consider is the need to remain productive. I think it's very clear that in our country, at least in the United States, that there is a lack of preparation economically for the fallout that the spread of this virus could have. And we don't really know when it's going to subside. I think the best estimates right now show that it's just getting started. So we may be looking at really a longer term change than just a few weeks of being out of the office.
And I think that is kind of interesting because obviously we hope it ends as quickly as possible. But I think one of the side effects is just going to be what we're experiencing is a shift to more remote work being a more lasting thing where we see, hey, we can actually do this pretty well. That's the hope, right? That we can do it well. And we're doing everything we can as PMs to maintain culture and productivity along the way.
Yeah.
And if we can prove it out of this, then that adds just yet another benefit to the team coming to work for us.
I think as product managers, is why it's so important for us to remain positive and be sources of motivation and encouragement for our teams. Because, I mean, you turn on the news, it's very gloom and doom right now.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's not to minimize the reality of the virus, because there is a reality there that is very serious and needs to be taken seriously. But at the same time, we need our teams to remain as productive as possible.
Yep.
We all need to continue contributing to our work. And I don't know about you, Jay, but I'd like to keep getting paid.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. So productivity is obviously key to that. If we're not delivering and not able to keep up that level, then it affects our clients' ability to deliver themselves.
That's right.
Thank you for listening to the Experience Lab from Digital Scientists. To learn more about our team and the great work we do, or even hire us, visit our website at digitalscientists.com.